Hey there, and welcome to episode 7 of Cyberpunk Librarian. One book goes FOSS. I'm Daniel Messer. Hello there, and welcome back to another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. My name is Daniel Messer, the Cyberpunk Librarian, and for the next few minutes, we're going to talk about a project that I was honored and lucky to work on with the Arizona State Library for their One Book Arizona initiative, and how we managed to work in a little free and open source software into the mix to create a new digital One Book setup. So this was the year that One Book went digital, and I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But hey, it is so nice to be back in front of the microphone again. I apologize that this podcast is a week late. Last week I managed to catch, I don't know exactly what it was I managed to catch, because it wasn't really a cold and it didn't quite feel like the flu. All I know is that I was really tired and lethargic, and everything hurt. I kind of had a sore throat, but it wasn't really a bad sore throat. I mean, I really don't know what it was. All I know is that I did not feel good. And the entire idea of sitting down behind, you know, in front of a microphone and firing up a podcast, it just wasn't going to happen. My voice didn't sound all that great. Well, my voice doesn't sound most, you know, great most of the time anyway. But my voice didn't sound that great. I was tired. I wasn't thinking clearly. So I wound up spending the entire weekend either sitting in a chair and reading or laying in bed and watching YouTube on the tablet. So, yeah. But what we're going to do is for the for this week, you get this podcast. And there will be another podcast immediately following it next week. So you'll get, instead of the bi-weekly thing, we'll get, you know, one every week for this next 2 weeks, because that will get me caught back up and put me back on my regular schedule. So you could kind of consider this a bonus podcast, or you could just kind of consider it me making up for lost time. Either way, I thank you for tuning in, and thank you for allowing the shuffle mechanism on your podcaster of choice to pull this podcast up, and that you're continuing to listening to it. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, I was honored and quite pleased to work on a project with the Arizona State Library. And like many states, Arizona has a sort of one book thing where the state will, you know, put out a thing, you know, we should all read this book and then we can talk about it and we can discuss it. And you can, you know, do things at your library, and librarians will typically get into the spirit of things, and there will be programs related to the one book at various branch libraries throughout the state. It can be a lot of fun. It can be a lot of work, but in the end, I think it pays off. And I do kind of like the one book initiative. Sometimes I don't agree with the books that they pick, but that's because I have really picky, finicky tastes, and it's not their fault. One time they did The Grapes of Wrath, and being a huge Steinbeck fan, I was okay with that. So this year, they want to do something a little different. Like many libraries, they find themselves with budget issues. Nothing bad, but when you do a one-book initiative, you kind of have to buy books, and you have to buy a lot of copies of the one book so you can get it out to the other libraries in the state and all of that. And that's okay, but the thing is, if you don't have to spend that money, then that's money you can spend somewhere else on another equally or more deserving project. So we put our heads together and we came up with this idea of One Book Goes Digital. So instead of doing the standard buying a whole bunch of paper, dead tree, stapled together or glued together with, you know, dead horses, you know, book, we decided to go with something in a digital format. And to sort of kick off the initiative, we decided to have a contest. And the contest was simple. We encouraged writers around the state to send in a story or a book or something like that. And those stories or books would get chosen to be the One Book Arizona for this year. So this presented a few challenges. And of course, not only do we have to collect the books, but then we have to make the books and get ebooks out of them and all of that, because very few authors submit ebooks as a final product. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into how we managed to get things collected, and then we're going to talk about how we did almost all of it for free. So stick around. Okay, so when you start to put together a statewide one-book initiative in which you're not only going to go digital, but you're going to start soliciting story ideas and stories and books and things like that from local sort of state writers, in this case Arizona writers, you're going to need basically an online presence. I mean, I suppose back in the day you could have done this through snail mail, but it would have taken months. It would have taken a long time. And quite frankly, we wanted to get something off the ground sooner rather than later. So we put our heads together, and being the web guy for the team, we decided to obviously go with a web-based solution. And as it happens, the library I work for has an online presence where we actually purchase web space on GoDaddy. And what that allows us to do is a few things here and there that we normally wouldn't want to do with our own servers at the library. It kind of mitigates the risk because it takes things off of our sort of mission critical servers and puts them offsite on servers that aren't connected to our major website in any way, shape, or form. So it's kind of nice having two houses that you can work within. So using the web space on GoDaddy, it's very easy to do things like set up a WordPress blog. So I always kind of refer myself as a WordPress engineer. I'm not a designer per se because I don't make templates. I've looked into what it takes to make a WordPress template, and wow, that's best left for people who know what the hell they're doing. Because I get the mechanics, I get the basics. If you held a gun to my head, I could probably make a WordPress template of some kind, but man, I got things to do, so I'm not going to be making WordPress templates anytime soon. But the reason I refer to myself as a WordPress engineer is I'm very good at taking the WordPress CMS and adapting it, tweaking it, fiddling with it, and making it into something more than just a blogging system. And WordPress has already done this for me. WordPress is no longer just a blogging system. It is a full-blown CMS, content management system. So this has gotten much easier, especially in the last 2 or 3 years, to make WordPress into just a website rather than a blog. So we set up a site where people could submit their stories, could submit their work. There is a One Book Arizona website, but it's on the state library servers, and they, of course, they don't have a whole lot of storage space there for people submitting stories and all of that. So we had to work out, how are we going to get submissions from Arizona authors and state authors, and how are we going to get those distributed to other people on the team who are going to look at these stories, evaluate these stories, eventually we'll start judging the stories, things like that. So we basically had to come up with a workflow, but that workflow sort of began with a website running WordPress. Now, at the end of this, I'll kind of give you a tally as to how much things really wound up costing us. But as far as software goes, all you need to know is that WordPress is absolutely free and that we pay for the hosting space on GoDaddy. And I want to say it's like $7 or $8 a month. It's very, very affordable, especially since this isn't the only thing we were doing with that space to begin with. So, okay, WordPress, that's free, totally free. And to further extend that, so we could take submissions we needed a few plugins. Now, if you've never worked with WordPress extensively or you've never worked with it at all, WordPress is brilliant in that it has these things called plugins. And basically what these things will do is extend WordPress to do things that it wasn't originally designed to do. Now, these plugins work easily within WordPress. WordPress is designed for plugins for this very reason. So this isn't a hack or anything like that. These are recognized plugins that do various things. And one of the more popular plugins that I know of for any sort of website or blog or something like that is a plugin called Contact Form 7. Now, this is one of those instances that I do not know what happened to contact forms 1 through 6. I guess we don't talk about them, and their names have been banished from the annals of history. But there is Contact Form 7, and Contact Form 7 is one of those things that you don't really realize what it does until you really start kind of looking at the documentation, and you realize that this thing is far more than just a way to set up an email me form without exposing your address to the entire world. Now, Contact Form 7 can do that, and that's ostensibly what it's for. It's to set up like an intake form for information, and that information can be emailed to an address, and the person on the sending end of things, on the website end of things, does not need to know what that address is. So that's sort of the basis of what it's for, but it does so much more. You can set up volunteer forms, like, fill out a form, and then when they click submit, that volunteer application gets submitted to a librarian. You can set it up as an email form, or in our case, you can set it up to not only pick up the name of an author, their email address, and their contact information, the title of their story, and stuff like that, but you can also have it pick up a file. Contact Form 7 has the ability to allow the transfer of files to the server, and eventually those files can be emailed someplace. So you can basically have an author do a submission for their story, and that story can be emailed to the judges or something like that. So we went a little further there because we weren't exactly sure how many judges would be involved, how many people would be working on things at the very end of the process when we're actually looking at stories and trying to figure out, which stories are the best. So instead of just having it emailed to a group of people or a person and who would act as the sort of moderator to send it out to the group of people, we decided to go with Dropbox. And the library I work for has its own Dropbox account, and there's plenty of space in there. It's a paid account, so I think we got like 100 gigs or something like that. So we had space to spare, and we just decided to set it up instead. So when an author would fill out this form on the WordPress site and upload their story, instead of sending it to a judge, it would send it to Dropbox. Now, there's a service that does this for you that's also free called sendtodropbox.com. And of course, I will have all of this stuff listed in the show notes for the podcast. You can pick that up at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And I'll have the links to pretty much everything I talk about in here. So if you're not taking notes or you're listening in the car, that's fine. Just go to the website later if you're really that interested. So yeah, Send to Dropbox is exactly what it sounds like. You go to the site, you authorize Send to Dropbox to work with your Dropbox through, I believe it's OAuth or something like that, open authorization. I believe that's what it is, but it's the standard sort of Dropbox authorization thing. And it will provide you a sort of secret email address. And that email address is exactly what you use in Contact Form 7 to send the information to. So in the end, we wound up setting up Contact Form 7 to collect things like the author's name, the title of the author's work, what audience this was aimed at, because we had audiences for kids, teens, and adults. So we just basically collected simple information, and then there was a browse button there to upload the form. Or not upload the form, sorry, upload the book that the author had written. The brilliant thing about Contact Form 7 is you can set it to only accept certain kinds of uploads, and this can be changed from form to form. So we set it up to accept only things like DOC files, doc files from Microsoft Word 97, DocX files from Word 2010, open document files, ODFs from things like LibreOffice, PDFs, we set it to receive images because we figured if some authors were writing children's books, there would be a lot of illustrations, and it might just be a stack of images. So, and I believe we set it up to accept zip files so they could zip up their stack of images and send those along too. So by doing that, you lock it down. You're not going to get some idiot uploading a bunch of, you know, QuickTime movies or WMVs or an audiobook or something like that, because we weren't accepting audiobooks. We wanted a print book. So that way we kind of locked it down and only got the things that we really needed for the program. And Send to Dropbox worked brilliantly. It was kind of fun sitting there. You know, I have it on my desktop at work, and every time something new would be added, it'd just pop up. It's like, you have a new file. It's like, oh, well, hey, it's working. And for, I believe we did a 30-day run of accepting submissions. And it was kind of funny just sitting there, just watching it pop up. You have a new file. You have a new file. And knowing that, hey, not only is this working, but people are submitting stories. This is going to be great. So Dropbox is not free. The library I work for, like I said, has a paid Dropbox account, but it's very inexpensive. I don't know the price off the top of my head, but I'll link it in the show notes, of course, and you can investigate that on your own. If you just have the free version, which I believe is 2 gigabytes, that might actually be enough. I don't think the submitted stories that we had equaled a gigabyte anyway. So you could probably get by with the free Dropbox offering there anyway, but we already had a paid version. We're using it for other things anyway. It was there. So while that's not free and open source, it works well with free and open source stuff. So WordPress, Contact Form 7, Dropbox, Send to Dropbox. We have a workflow. We have a method of getting the stories from the authors and being able to disseminate them out to the people who would be doing the judging. And that's pretty easy too, because in Dropbox, you can share out a folder to people. You can basically make a folder kind of public. At the very least, it's public in the matter of that you can say, I want to share this folder with this list of email addresses, and those people can now access the folder. And that enabled us to, like I said, that gave us the method of getting the stories out to the judges and stuff, because at the time we weren't sure how many judges we were going to have. One of the folks that was involved in the project was going to contact several people that she knew. Someone else was going to contact other people that he knew and see if they had any interest. So when we first started out, we figured the judges could either be us or maybe we'd have other people join in. And we really hoped for other people because we also really hoped to get a lot of stories. And we did, as a matter of fact. I want to say that we got something like 30. Something like that. So it was not bad. Not bad at all. So, okay. We have our stories now. And the workflow after that was pretty simple. A few of us went through and just kind of did a quick vetting to make sure that, you know, some joker didn't upload something that was, you know, highly pornographic. Things like that. So, you know, things that we cannot disseminate as a state library project or as a library in general. I mean, we're not going to distribute hardcore pornography that someone just uploaded as a joke. Fortunately, that wasn't a problem. All of the submissions were books, and pretty good books at that. So we went through and made sure that no one had uploaded something untoward, and then we just started sending them out. We just shared the folder to the people who were going to be judging and say, hey, you know, please have your decisions ready by such and such date. So that was great. And in the end, we all had one last big meeting to figure out what our final selections were, and we made those selections. And from then on out, we contacted the authors and got their permission to make ebooks. Because, like I said, no one submitted in an ebook format, even though we were accepting EPUB and Mobi uploads. No one did that. Absolutely no one uploaded an honest-to-goodness ebook. We got Word, you know, Word documents, and I think we had a one or two LibreOffice document things. So to put those on an e-reader, you're going to have to convert them. You're going to have to do a little work. And the good news is it's very easy to do so as long as you have a couple tools. And I've talked about these tools on a long past previous episode of Cyberpunk Librarian before I relaunched this as a, you know, relaunched the podcast, really. And, you know, maybe for the next episode I'll talk about these tools more in depth. But what you really need to know is if you need to make an ebook out of something, there's plenty of ways to go with it. But the easiest way that I know of is a couple plugins and some free and open source software called LibreOffice. Now, LibreOffice is the sort of open source version of Microsoft Office. It's got a word processor, it's got spreadsheets, it's got a one of those slideshow presentation things they call LibreOffice Impress. It's pretty much got everything that Microsoft Office has. Of course, it's the free and open source clone of it, so it may not be as feature-rific, but I'm a writer. I've written two books now, and I'm working on a third. And you know what? LibreOffice works pretty well for me. So I'm sure there are people out there that really need the enhanced functionality and advanced features of Microsoft Word. I'm just not one of them. So using LibreOffice is great because it will open Microsoft Office documents without a problem. So for our final choices, they were all in DocX format. I'm pretty sure that's the case. Either way, I was able to open all of them in LibreOffice. Anyway, some of them had pictures because we have, of course, had a children's book and it had pictures. Some of them did not. You know, the team book had little images here and there that were basically sort of like a chapter heading or a decoration for a chapter heading. And the adult book had a few photographs, but nothing too big and bold. So I opened these in LibreOffice, and in LibreOffice you can do some tweaking and editing. And the reason you want to do that is there's a wonderful plugin for LibreOffice called Writer to EPUB. Now, LibreOffice is just the name of the suite. The programs themselves have their own names. So the word processor is called LibreOffice Writer. And when I tell you that, and I tell you about a plugin called Writer to EPUB, you totally know what that does now. It will take a LibreOffice Writer document, and it will convert it into EPUB format. Beyond that, you can do just a simple, quick conversion. You can just open it up, fire up the plugin, and go. But we want to do something, you know, somewhat decent looking, make it look, you know, easy to read and easy to use. So using Writer to EPUB, what you want to do is make sure your chapter headings are set as heading level 1. So if you have a chapter like called chapter 1 or chapter 2, you want to set chapter 1 itself to be a heading level 1, same with chapter 2. You just set those words to be first level headings. And when you do that, Writer to EPUB will automatically generate a table of contents based off those first level headings. It's brilliant, and it's absolutely easy to do. I probably spent 30 minutes on all three final submissions that made the finals and were the winners for the One Book Arizona system. So it's very easy to do. Went through and cleaned a few things up here and there just to make sure it would work in an EPUB, and then launched Writer to EPUB. It's a plugin for LibreOffice, so it launches right in LibreOffice Writer. And the great thing is when you launch this, it's going to ask you if you have any metadata for it. And it's simple metadata, but it's useful metadata because you can put in the title of the work, which you probably want, the author, publication, the publication date. You can put in a description and brief synopsis of it, and you can set a cover image. And the cover image can be set in a few ways. The two sort of most obvious are to set either the first image in the work as a cover image. So if they've uploaded an image to the very first page of their book, and that's sort of their title image, you can use that. Or you can just use an external image file for the cover image. And that's what we wound up doing, is we had we had external image files for the covers, and you just say, okay, I want you to use this image as the cover. And then you fill out the metadata as much as you need to do, and you click OK, and it goes to work. You'll see the screen flash a little bit as it rolls through whatever it's doing, its machinations or whatever. And then it comes back, you're presented with your document again, and in the same directory that your document was saved in, you will find an EPUB file. It is just that simple. We opened up the EPUB files in a variety of readers and found that, they look fine. The cover images were there, except for a couple circumstances, and I'm going to talk about that here in a second. But for the most part, the books look great. And once again, free and open source technology. That's LibreOffice and Writer to EPUB. They're both free. And made some great ebooks out of that. But there's one final problem, and there always is, isn't there? The final problem is that EPUB works great on everything except Amazon Kindle. Now, I have no problem with the Kindle. As a matter of fact, I have one sitting behind me here on the shelf. It's a fine e-reader. The problem is it does not adhere to any sort of standards. It's everything is Amazon or it does not exist, which is a bit of a problem because EPUB is sort of an international standard for ebooks. So the fact that it doesn't read it is kind of a bug, in my opinion, but it's easily dealt with. You can do a couple things. We could always just tell people, well, if you want to read this on your Kindle, you're going to have to download an EPUB reader. And there are EPUB readers for the Kindle Fire and things like that. But that leaves out the Kindle e-ink people, and there's plenty of those out there. I see them all the time in the libraries. And with Kindle e-ink, there are no apps. It either has to be Kindle format or it does not work. So to just make everything work and make it work properly, we used one final bit of free and open source software called Calibre. Now, some people pronounce it Calibre, which I guess is okay, but I've heard the guy that does the Calibre project call it Calibre. So that's C-A-L-I-B-R-E, if you wonder why I'm making a big deal of the pronunciation. So Calibre is ostensibly, I sort of refer to it as iTunes for ebooks, because it does many of the same things that iTunes does, except it does it for ebooks. So you can have your library in Calibre, you can have all of the metadata and the author information, you can search it, you can change information, you can add your own synopsises, synopsis? I don't know. That's one of those I'll have to look up. But you add your own synopsis to the books and all of that stuff. You can, add your own cover images if you need to. You can rate the books. You can type notes on the books. It's a great program. And as an added bonus, it will convert ebook formats to other ebook formats. And it does it all for free. It's a great system, great program. And all I did at the end was sort of make sure that the EPUBs looked okay. And then I opened them up in Calibre and converted them to MOBI files, M-O-B-I. And M-O-B-I will work on the Kindle Fire. It will work on the Kindle e-ink. It will work fine. So in the end, we wound up with two ebook files, one for Kindle and one for everything else that isn't Kindle. And in the end, we wound up paying hardly anything for all of this. And I still think we got great quality ebooks out of it. We got quality looking ebooks out of it with tables of contents and all of the things you expect to see in an ebook. And in the end, we wound up paying for web space and we wound up paying for a Dropbox account that we were already paying for both of those anyway. So really the total cost of the software for the project washed out because this is stuff we already had available and stuff that we already had sort of online and laying around ready for use. And more than anything with Cyberpunk Librarian, not only do I stress the use of open source technology, because free and open source technology always fits within a librarian's budget, but I also would equally like to stress the fact that if you have something available, you should totally use it. And sometimes it's also good to look at the things you have available and wonder if you might use it in a new and different way that will help you solve a problem. And in the end, some people say, well, it's kind of a hack to use Contact Form 7 with Send a Dropbox to get your ebook files to more than one person. Well, maybe it is kind of a hack, but I can also state that that hack worked perfectly. We had one hang-up, and it was because author had submitted an ebook in a very odd format, and things just were not working well. And in the end, we still don't know what was wrong with that, but we still got all of these ebooks, and we wound up with three winners. Okay, so one last snag that we ran into, and I have to share this because it's going to come up if you do anything like this with EPUB, and that is the fact that when we opened our EPUB books in various EPUB readers, either on tablets or a standalone EPUB reader, they always looked a little bit different. You know, it looked a little different on the iPad, that looked a little bit different on the Kindle Fire, which looked a little bit different from the Android tablet, and so on. And I want to kind of explain that because some people just don't know what an EPUB is. They think it's an ebook. And you're absolutely right, it is an ebook. But it's a special kind of ebook format that folks don't actually dig into all that much because they don't care. It's an ebook. Why do I care? But there is a really good reason why an EPUB might look different on different devices. And it's something that you're probably used to dealing with almost all the time. And rather than seeing it in an EPUB, you see it on the web. Now, the funny thing about websites is depending on how they're coded, what their content management system is, what technologies they're using for delivery, all of that, a website can work and look okay, yet look slightly different if you open it in Internet Explorer, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, whatever. It will still look and work fine, but it's going to look a little different. And most people just accept that knowing that, well, websites look different in different browsers sometimes. Fine. Okay. An EPUB is a website. And I know that sounds weird and it sounds bizarre, but if you don't believe me, try this. Get yourself an EPUB. Just download one from Project Gutenberg. As a matter of fact, get one with images. I don't care what it is. You can find some great old pulp sci-fi magazines on Project Gutenberg that have images. But go get a .epub from Project Gutenberg. That way you don't have to pay any money. Download it to your computer. Great. Now then, before you open it, don't open the EPUB. Rename it. And when you rename it, change the .epub to .zip, Z-I-P. Your computer might complain, you know, it'll say, oh, you're changing the extension on this. Are you sure you want to do this? Yes, it's just an EPUB. It won't hurt. When you change it to a .zip and then double-click it, it will open. And it will open in your Zip Manager program, whether that be Windows, Compressed Archive Manager, or whatever you're using for Linux, or the Mac version of a Zip Archive Manager. It will open. And you will see pretty much 2 to 3, sometimes more, folders in there. And if you open up one of those folders, sometimes it has different names, so I'm not going to figure out what the name is for your EPUB, but fish around. You're going to find a folder that has things in it called, like, chapter1.xhtml. This is extensible HTML, and it is web code. It is the same exact code that you would see on the web. And the way it calls images is very similar to how a website calls images. There's a directory structure, and it calls images from within that directory structure and populates them to the EPUB, just in the same way that a website will call images from its images directory and populate them to the website with whatever formatting guidelines that they set in the image call. So really, when you're looking at an EPUB file, you are looking at a glorified web page. And because of that, at least this is my own theory, but it seems to hold up, because it all depends on how the app that you're using for your EPUBs handles the rendering of that web code, it's the same thing that you see online. Because it's web code and because everything sort of renders that stuff differently, it's probably going to get rendered different in the various EPUB things that you use. So if you're using an EPUB app on Android, it'll look a little different than the EPUB app on iOS. So we ran into one snag there where we had an error that popped up on two of the EPUB readers. And I'll just give you a heads up on that in case you ever want to do this again. It turns out that the error was due to the table of contents, not the one generated by the EPUB maker, but the one that's actually in the book that would be printed on paper, was set to be read-only. And it looks like it had a problem with that. Also, in iBooks, some of the covers did not always show up, but sometimes they did. And the covers were there, they just didn't show up on the whole bookshelf view. So that was really strange. But iBooks and the OverDrive Media Console were the only two e-readers that I tried that threw that error. So just a word to the wise, kind of watch out for that. And just like you would do if you were making a website, when you make a website, and take this from a web guy, if there's something new that you're putting online that you've never had online before, you want to test it in all the browsers. When I put something new online, I open it in Internet Explorer because that's what my library system uses. But then I open it in Chrome, and then I open it in Firefox, and then I swing over to my MacBook Air and open it in Safari, and then I'll open it in Firefox and Chrome on the MacBook Air. And then I will make a smaller turn to a Linux box that I have on my desk and check it out there as well. I will open it in all the browsers, and then I'll pick up an iPad and an Android tablet and look at it there. Because the browser you don't check is the one that's going to bite you. And I believe this is the same case with EPUB. When you make an EPUB, check it out in a few different EPUB apps. Chances are it's going to look fine in all of them, but there might be one here and there that you're going to run into a thing that you might just need to clean up. So check that out. Make sure you get your things together. And in the end, we paid nothing for any of this. All the money was already paid and outlaid. All of the budget stuff had been taken care of beforehand. We already had the web space. We already had the Dropbox. All we needed was the software, and the software was free. So hey, that about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in, and I hope you pick up some insights on how to use free and open source software and even existing technology that you might already have available at your library in new and novel ways. Collecting information online and getting it distributed to a whole bunch of people in a timely manner, that's what the technology is there for. Sometimes you just have to look at it from a different angle and figure out how might be the best way to do that. So we'll be back again this time next week, and that should put me back on my normal schedule. Cyberpunk Librarian is usually released every 2 weeks, but since I got sick last week, I'm going to do this as a sort of catch-up episode, and then next week I'll release an episode that should put me back on the normal track and running, you know, at the 2 week intervals and all of that stuff. The music you're listening to right now is Space Crunkadelics Part 2 by Ample Mammal. And the opening track, as always, is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Meshita. You can find both of these tracks and more just like them and totally not like them on the Free Music Archive. That's at freemusicarchive.org. I'll have links to all this in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. But if you hit up the Free Music Archive, you'll find some great tracks, some new things that you've never heard before because they don't play that stuff on the radio. And hey, that's okay. Sometimes the stuff is just too good for radio. If you want to hit me up with a message or a comment or something like that, you can leave comments right on the site at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Or you can do the sort of normal thing with email. I'm cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Drop me a line. Let me know what you think of the show or if there's something you'd like me to talk to or something you'd like me to talk about. I'm always open for suggestions. You can hit me up on Twitter. I'm @Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It's like librarian, but with a B. And you can also catch me on Google Plus and Google Hangouts. I am there as a, what is it, plus.google.com/plus Daniel Messer, or I believe it's also google.com/the+Daniel Messer. You can pick me up there too. So by all means, get in touch with me. If you've got something to say or if you've got something you'd like me to cover on the show, I'm always willing to take suggestions. So hey, let me know. I thank you for tuning in, and for now, just signing off, letting you know that you don't have to be high tech to be low budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care now.